You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of September 26, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, how was your week?
My week was really, really fantastic. Thanks. I didn't really have a lot of time for Turkish football like I usually hope to, but I did spend the weekend in Canada, and I spent a lot of time in Florida, so I'm a little bit mixed up weather-wise, but other than that, it's all good. How are things with you?
Doing very well, thank you very much. And you said last week that we would have a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of Turkish football right at the end of the podcast. And, of course, I did update everybody as to what Gaziantepspor manager Bülent Uygun and Eskişehirspor player Erkan Zengin, their sanctions were reduced, believe it or not. I did happen to mention that, and I guess we'll talk a little bit about that this week. However, there were two things this past week that were very, very major in terms of just breaking in the news and things like that. So let's get to the league results first. We'll save those two major news bites for later. We'll start off with Friday matches, the results for week 5 of the Turkish Super League. Akhisar Belediyespor beats Gaziantepspor 2-0, and Karabükspor and Erciyesspor play to a 0-0 draw. Nothing really much to write home about. Bülent Uygun was on the sidelines for Gaziantepspor coaching them. Well, it didn't really look too good in terms of the result, as Gaziantepspor still with that one draw, that 1 point, and still bottom of the table. But for Akhisar Belediyespor, not a bad start, and I think we have to highlight Omar Niasse, or Nias, as the Turkish commentators are calling him. I don't know the exact pronunciation of that, but 3 goals in 5 games, and he seems to be the replacement that they were looking for when Theofanis Gekas couldn't be re-signed. Kenan Özer with the only other goal for Akhisar in the 90th minute there, Nias scoring in the 36th minute. But while Uygun does return to the sidelines with his 3-match suspension completely rescinded, and his fine was also rescinded as well, doesn't look too good for Gaziantepspor. I mean, for Karabükspor and Erciyesspor, it was just, well, it was one of those 0-0 draws that really didn't have much in terms of events there. But for Akhisar Belediyespor, not too bad of a start. They're in 4th place so far.
Yeah, no, and they've won all 3 of their home games. This was their 3rd win, so they're performing in front of the home crowd well enough. Gaziantepspor, of course, is quickly becoming that sort of bottom-feeding team, although it's in terms of the table, their position in the table, that is. But, of course, there's, you know, a couple of wins, and they'd be up near, you know, the middle toward the top of the table. But early days, but still we haven't really seen anything in terms of, like, good news from Gaziantep. But Akhisar Belediye, they've only given up 1 goal at home. It was in their first match of the season, and they still managed to win, so They're looking good. So far, so good. Certainly better than last season at this point.
Right. And we'll definitely have to keep our eye out for Akhisar Belediyespor there. Let's move on to Saturday's matches. Konyaspor beating Gençlerbirliği 1-0. Sivasspor losing to Kasımpaşa at home 2-1. Eskişehirspor beating Antalyaspor 2-1. And Fenerbahçe beating Elazığspor at home 4-0. Konyaspor Gençlerbirliği, Selamay got 2 yellow cards, leaving Konyaspor with 10 men. That was in the 72nd minute, but Erdal Kilic Aslan with the only goal there in the 45th minute to give Konyaspor their first win since their week 1 win against Fenerbahçe. For the Eskişehirspor Antalyaspor match, Erkan Zengin, we talked about him a bit last week. His suspension got reduced to 1 game, so he did miss this match. And Cristobal Jorquera and Aytaç Kara with the goals for Eskişehirspor there. Lamine Diarra with the only goal for Antalyaspor. And Hürriyet Gücer got a direct red card in the 81st minute after a foul on Promis Isak of Antalyaspor. And it just came out today as we are recording this that Gücer will be banned for the next three matches. Sivasspor Kasımpaşa, Oscar Scarione and Tabari Viude scoring the goals for Kasımpaşa there. Manuel da Costa with another highlight reel goal, the free kick off the post and in. In the 45th minute for the only goal for Sivasspor there. Maybe a little bit of karma for Cicinho. He did see a yellow card in this match. And as for Fenerbahçe and Elazığspor, Bursaspor scoring a hat-trick after missing the last two league games. Basically, I think the reasoning was it was more for rotation purposes. Dirk Kuyt with the only other goal for Fenerbahçe there. So Fenerbahçe on a four-match winning streak. But I guess we could talk a little bit about the Eskişehirspor Antalyaspor match. You know, Hürriyet Gücer's red card. 5 minutes after that, Aytaç Kara scores the goal, giving Eskişehirspor the win here. So Gücer, you know, that foul, I mean, it seemed as though that the direct red card was kind of warranted because it seemed like Gücer did kick Isak in the thigh area, the left thigh area. But three matches? That might be a little bit much. I mean, the two matches are pretty much the standard for direct red cards, but, you know, that's just, I don't know. It just seems to be like that red card, the punishment didn't really warrant the crime. I mean, when we get to what happened in the Beşiktaş Galatasaray match later on in the podcast, we will talk more about the punishments there. But in comparison, I think with Gücer, maybe two matches would have been enough. But still, Eskişehirspor does get the win, even though they went down to 10 men with under 10 minutes to go.
I think they must have been looking at intent with regards to, you know, punishments following the red card, because, you know, it was just probably the least professional looking play, one of the least professional looking plays I've seen this season, whereby, you know, Hürriyet Gücer just kind of like, he just kind of swings his foot. I mean, the ball is nowhere to be seen. The player, there's absolutely no good that could have come out of it. And even though I think he sort of barely touched the guy at the end, why is he swinging his foot like that? You know, it was like a frustration kick or something, trailing a player who was making a fast run toward the goal. So it still had a ways to go, but the ball had definitely changed movement pretty suddenly. And three matches is kind of harsh, in my opinion, just given that barely any real contact was made. It felt kind of lame, but when you look at the play, you're just sort of more distracted by the thought of, like, what's he doing, you know?
Right.
Like, why? Who does that?
Right. And Gücer was kind of arguing. He was like, what the hell? I can't believe that. But, you know, that's, I mean, looking at the replay, I mean, Gücer did kind of deserve the red card, but Eskişehirspor still gets the win, so it really didn't really
yes.
matter for them. So
some justice, believe it or not, perhaps in the Turkish Super League, something we don't see too often. But, you know, yeah, even down a man, they're able to find a winning goal. That must have been pretty unexpected, you know, coming from the Antalyaspor side, which, you know, there's a team which still hasn't found a win this season. So
right.
Just not good. If you're up a man, you should at least be able to get a point out of the situation.
Right. So for Kasımpaşa, they also got the win over Sivasspor. You know, Manuel da Costa for Sivasspor, I mean, I don't know if you saw his goal in the 45th minute, but just a really rousing goal, long-range free kick, kept it low off the post and in, but unfortunately it wasn't enough. Kasımpaşa got the win there. And, you know, Kasımpaşa, they're kind of like the team that could play the surprise package, you know, maybe surprise like the bigger teams and such like that. The Istanbul club does have a very, very solid roster. You know, obviously Tabari Viudez is one of the players that people should watch for Kasımpaşa. But for them, I mean, another win for Sivasspor, and, you know, they're 9 points. Right now they are fifth in the table. So,
sorry, I think you meant another win for Kasımpaşa, right? another loss for Sivasspor.
Right, another loss for Sivasspor. What did I say?
You said another win for Sivasspor, but we might have to wait. We might have to wait till next week to see that.
Right.
But yeah. No. But your point's valid. I mean, Kasımpaşa, they're one of the strongest road teams we've seen so far. You know, they've gotten this, I guess, was their second win on the road. So they're looking good. You've always had your eye on them as sort of that team that can sort of do it on the road or even against tough teams, tougher than Sivasspor.
Right. Well, I think that the only thing we can say for the Fenerbahce-Elazığspor match is, well, Moussa Sow's performance was, well, top of the charts, really. I mean, you know, scoring a hat trick. I mean, there were some rumors that he didn't get along with Coach Ersun Yanal, but I guess it was just more for rotation purposes. And, you know, he comes in, scores a hat trick, and Fenerbahce basically blows away Elazığspor. I mean, that's all I really need to say about that.
It's the first time they've been shut out this season, actually, Elazığspor. So, you know, quite a feat for Fenerbahce. I mean, you look at the score and you think, oh, gee, you know, Elazığspor, you know, must be an easy team to just roll over. But, you know, so far this season they haven't been. But along comes Fenerbahce, and Moussa Sow seemed like ready to prove himself, it seems.
All right. So let's move on to Sunday and Monday results. Obviously, the derby was played on Sunday, but we'll get to that later. Actually, we're going to have a whole segment really dedicated to that match. If you haven't heard about it, well, you probably saw it on the internet, on the news, and all those things. But let's talk about Çaykur Rizespor against Bursaspor and Monday's only result, Trabzonspor against Kayserispor in Kayseri. Çaykur Rizespor beating Bursaspor 2-1, and Kayserispor losing at home to Trabzonspor 1-0. You know, Rizespor is still looking pretty good right now. I mean, they're off to their best start ever at this level in Turkish top-flight football. So, Sercan Kaya and Florence Serenat with the goals for Rizespor there. The only goal for Bursaspor was from Pablo Batalla in the 45th minute. And for Trabzonspor, Paulo Henrique scoring in the 61st minute to give Trabzonspor the win in Kayseri. And we look at Rizespor right now. I mean, we're not going to get to talk about Ali Adnan this week, obviously, because he didn't score, but, you know, he put in a pretty good performance. But, you know, Florence Serenat, the former Karabükspor player, doing well to get the goal for Rizespor there. Sercan Kaya also. But Rizespor, they're actually looking very impressive so far, you know, but it's almost like I'm thinking, you know, when is it going to end? You know, when is this good run of form going to end? Because obviously, Rizespor is probably not going to be a championship contender. However, a European spot may not be out of the question for them at this point, but they do have to keep that form up.
It's definitely worth noting in the case of Çaykur Rizespor that the highest ranked team that they've beaten is currently like in 13th place. So now granted, they kind of helped send some of those teams to the bottom of the table, but it's, you know, we're five games in now, and they've really been playing, you know, the likes of Gençlerbirliği, Kayseri Erciyes, Gaziantepspor, and even Bursaspor. It's, you know, pretty much they haven't, you know, we just haven't seen them play a team that's been able to have a good couple of games so far this season. I'll spoil it a little bit. This weekend they're going to have to face Galatasaray in Istanbul, and I think that'll be a really good chance to see, hey, are they this team that really deserves to be, you know, amongst the best at the top of the table, you know, or will they flop completely? But you know, so far so good for them. They're one of only a couple of teams that scored in every game. So far this season. The other ones are Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş, although maybe there's a little bit of an asterisk there.
Right. And going on to Trabzonspor, Paulo Henrique is on fire at this point. I mean, he scored in the Europa League game before this. I mean, he scored here. And, you know, he's been doing really well. It's almost like he's trying to prove himself that he's kind of like going to be the guy who is going to replace Burak Yılmaz. You know, he did get signed last season. But, you know, Paulo Henrique is maybe the guy, maybe that striker that Trabzonspor fans have been looking for to replace Burak Yılmaz, because remember when Yılmaz left for Galatasaray, I mean, that was a huge hole that they needed to fill, but it looks like Paulo Henrique is coming into the fore to replace, or really to fill in that hole that Yılmaz left when he went to Galatasaray.
Yeah, and Trabzonspor definitely deserved this win. You know, this game was crazy. You got to see the highlights of it. It was just, how many times can a team come really close to scoring without quite scoring? And that's for both teams. It was just back and forth, you know, all the way through. And I felt a little bad for Kayserispor. I mean, this kind of ended their you know, no shutout streak, you know, failing to score this time. And there was a penalty call that I think they didn't get, but the Trabzonspor definitely looked like the better team. And Paulo Henrique, a big part of that. I mean, this goal wasn't really so much his individual effort as just being there for the cross, but a good game, and disappointing though it was for the home fans.
All right. So I don't think we should really look at the standings right now because we still have not figured out what happened in terms of the result of the Beşiktaş-Galatasaray derby. We are going to talk about that on our next segment. Right now, Beşiktaş does have 12 points. Still, probably they're a little bit of a spoiler. They'll probably get a forfeit loss. But Fenerbahçe gets 12 points. Rizespor has 12 points. Akhisar Belediyespor, Kasımpaşa, and Trabzonspor all with 9. Karabükspor has 8, and Eskişehirspor and Elazığspor with 7 points. That's 1 through 9. Galatasaray in 10th with 6 points. Sivasspor and Konyaspor also have 6 points. Erciyesspor in 13th with 5. Three teams with 4 points: Gençlerbirliği, Kayserispor, and Bursaspor. Bursaspor is in 16th. Antalyaspor is in 17th with 3 points, and Gaziantepspor at the bottom with that 1 point. So,
yeah, worth noting that Galatasaray probably isn't going to be in 10th place with 6 points when it's all sorted. But yeah, basically that whole situation's still a bit of a mess right now.
Right, and as of the recording of this podcast, we still don't know what exactly the result of the Beşiktaş-Galatasaray derby is. The PFDK have not announced that. But let's take a look at the Week 6 schedule. Friday, the 27th of September, Bursaspor will face Akhisar Belediyespor. Saturday's matches will feature Gaziantepspor hosting Karabükspor and Galatasaray hosting Rizespor. Sunday's matches will feature Elazığspor hosting Sivasspor, Trabzonspor hosting Konyaspor, Kasımpaşa hosting Eskişehirspor, and Gençlerbirliği hosting Fenerbahçe. Monday's matches will feature Erciyesspor facing Kayserispor in the Kayseri Derby and Antalyaspor hosting Beşiktaş. So I look at these matches, you know, it's going to be a tough test for Rizespor to face Galatasaray in the Turk Telekom Arena, and we'll see if Rizespor is for real, so to speak, there. But I should have said this earlier, I'm kind of disappointed in Bursaspor so far, considering the season. I mean, yeah, they're in 16th place with 4 points, but I still keep thinking, what would have happened if Hikmet Karaman wasn't sacked after that Vojvodina game some months ago? You know, I mean, it seems to me firing Karaman right before the season began and then bringing Christoph down really messed up the chemistry. And for Bursaspor, they're struggling right now. And for Akhisar Belediyespor, okay, they're not doing too well on the road, from what I'm implying, from what you said. You know, you were saying that Akhisar Belediyespor is a better home team than a road team, but for Akhisar, this will be a good test to see if they could beat a very disappointing Bursaspor team. And
yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, Bursaspor, they're going to be looking for their first home victory. You know, the Bursa fans haven't seen that yet. And of course, Akhisar Belediye, they've won every home game and lost every road game. And maybe they'll be looking for at least a point out of this one.
Right. So now looking at Sunday's matches, Trabzonspor and Konyaspor should be interesting there to see if Paulo Henrique can continue his little form up. You know, Gençlerbirliği against Fenerbahçe, well, that can be tough, but, Gençlerbirliği, they're not doing too well in the standings, obviously, and Fenerbahçe is still flying high. You know, Elazığspor and Sivasspor should be interesting to see if Elazığspor can recover from that beating they took. And Kasımpaşa and Eskişehirspor should be interesting to see if Eskişehirspor does miss Hülya Gücer in the midfield. Erkan Zengin should be back for that matchup. And we have a Kayseri derby on Monday. It's been a while since we've said that. And we'll see what happens when Beşiktaş has to travel to Antalya. And they will be facing their former coach, Samet Aybaba. In case you don't know, Samet Aybaba is the coach of Antalyaspor now. But that should be interesting. And especially because, if I may spoil it a little bit here, they might not have Slaven Bilic on the sidelines. So Beşiktaş will have maybe a bit of a tough test there going to Antalya. But looking at Sunday and Monday matches, I don't know if we can see a real match of the week. But to me, I think if there is a match of the week, it's probably going to be Kasımpaşa against Eskişehirspor, only because Eskişehirspor, they're doing relatively well. They're 2 points behind Kasımpaşa in the standings. But for Kasımpaşa, they're at home. They should be able to pull out a win against Eskişehirspor, especially when Eskişehirspor is going to be missing one of the key components in their midfield in Hürriyet Gücer.
Yeah.
I think for me, Galatasaray Rizespor might be sort of one of the matches I'm really looking forward to trying to see, just because Galatasaray, okay, they showed up to the derby, which we'll talk about, but they, you know, other than that, they haven't really impressed. And, you know, you could also argue they've been a bit distracted with the Champions League, which they're going to have to face Juventus this week. And so are they going to, you know, be there this weekend, you know, against Rizespor? Rizespor hasn't been anywhere near the city of Istanbul yet this season. There are two away matches, were in Trabzon and in Gaziantep. So this is sort of their debut in Istanbul after a while, at least in the Super League. So that'll be kind of interesting to see them.
So I guess we've got two matches of the week that people really should look forward to. Kasımpaşa and Eskişehirspor, Galatasaray against Rizespor. And you make a good point. You know, Rizespor really haven't faced a team with the quality of Galatasaray. So that should be interesting to see how Rizespor responds I don't want to say hostile, but it'll be a hostile crowd, especially what happened this week in terms of Galatasaray's coaching situation, and we will get to that later because that basically broke Twitter in Turkey. But yeah, I mean, those two matches I would say would probably be the matches that people should be looking forward to.
Yeah, and but watch them all. I mean, if you can.
Okay.
Some of these minor games have been really thrilling. I don't know. We don't have enough time on the podcast to get into all of them, but it's definitely another crazy season in Turkey.
Right. So that'll do it for this segment of Turkish Football Weekly. Coming up, we will be talking all about the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby from this past Sunday, all the fallout, and, of course, that pitch invasion y'all saw in the derby where everything just went to hell in a heartbeat. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. It's time to talk about the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby that really made headlines for really the wrong reasons. Now, there was a record attendance for a Turkish Super League game or a Turkish top flight football game, and 76,127 fans showed up at the Atatürk Olympic Stadium for this match. There were no Galatasaray fans present due to the ban on away fans for derbies. And the score was 2-1 in favor of Galatasaray before getting abandoned by an invasion of the pitch by Beşiktaş fans. Let's talk really about the match first. The scoring opening up with Hugo Almeida's header in the 18th minute, you know, unmarked by the Galatasaray defense. You know, the cross from the right flank by Serdar Kurtuluş. It seemed to be like on that first goal, the Galatasaray defense was really ball watching, and Hugo Almeida just had, maybe not all the time in the world, but he had enough time to like set up and, you know, aim his header right into the goal. And I was just thinking, though, where was the marking on that? It just seemed as though the Galatasaray defense was in shambles during that goal. But Almeida scoring the goal, I mean, and it sent everybody there into a frenzy.
Yeah, I mean, you say Galatasaray defense looked like they were, really not paying any attention during the goal, but they weren't really paying any attention, for about the 10 minutes before and after. It was sort of painful to watch. I actually did catch most of this game, even though I was in Canada at the time, and I was showing my friends there the game, and I was like, they're like, which team are you going for? I'm like, I'm hoping for that team that doesn't seem to, whose defense looks like they're asleep. I mean, that goal was just, it was just inevitable. The passing that led up to it was just beautiful. You almost called every pass as it happened, and it was just wonderfully executed. And I think everybody kind of saw that one coming. Just from the first half, I would say, it really didn't look like Galatasaray was going to be able to bounce back, just the way they were playing. There wasn't really a lot to hang on to. Okay, there were a couple of opportunities. Right, you had Burak Yılmaz doing the classic Burak Yılmaz thing of getting in a great position and then kicking it right at the keeper. You had Drogba, who kind of lost power on a shot from maybe 6 yards and right at the end of the half, and that didn't go for him. But, you know, Galatasaray had chances. Beşiktaş had at least as many chances. And it was, yeah, for my money, it was kind of a dismal start for Galatasaray.
Right. Well, in the 34th minute, Beşiktaş fans started chanting that Her Yer Taksim, Her Yer Direniş chant. You know, the Taksim resistance chants that I've been referring to on previous weeks of this podcast. Now, what League TV did, instead of just muting the sound, they put in audio of cheers from previous matches. So, obviously, there's the political tint there, and we've said that this is very politically charged season, and we'll actually talk more about that later on in this segment. But I think you said it best, why am I not surprised there? You know, I mean, that's not surprising. But your thoughts about the cheers?
Obviously, as a freedom loving American, but really as a human, I really just don't like censorship. I don't, you know, I think that thing just kind of like it gets under my skin in a way. But I think you got to learn to sort of laugh at the situation and kind of hope it changes for the better. I don't think anybody watching the games thinks, I don't feel like going to one of these matches because it looks like it might not be that exciting. I mean, I most of the time you can't really make out what people are chanting, really, even though you know what they might be chanting. It's kind of hard for that audio to come in on TV anyway. So I don't think it really has any major effect. It's no secret that they were chanting those chants. It's all a little bit pathetic to me, really.
Right, right. But in the second half, Galatasaray got their two goals through Didier Drogba. And that first goal, I mean, it really all has to be credited to Bruma for keeping with the play. Taking the ball away from Serdar Kurtulus, like right near the goal line. And then he passes it off to Drogba and Drogba scores. And then the second goal is one that everybody seemed to be talking about before it all went to hell, so to speak. Veli Kablak's pass intercepted by Burak Yılmaz, eventually passing off to Drogba and Drogba scoring, but the controversy there was whether Yılmaz played it with the arm or not. Now, there was one angle that League TV was showing in their replays, but I kind of thought that was pathetic considering, you know, there are like zillions of camera angles that you could show, especially for a game like this. And if they showed, different angles of that, maybe we would have had a better idea of whether Yılmaz played the ball off his arm or whether it was just mostly, one of those hand-to-ball situations instead of ball-to-hand, you know, with all the handball calls that, you know, we always talk about on this podcast. But, Didier Drogba coming through in the clutch for Galatasaray before everything, went to hell.
Yeah, for my eyes, it looked like Burak Yılmaz kind of took the ball sort of off his rib cage. But, you know, like you say, they didn't really go into that a whole lot on TV to really settle the matter. But it didn't look like a handball to me, but you know, maybe it was. And Drogba really pulling through. Seems to be a real team leader these days. He might even be up for the job, so to speak. But leading the team on the field at the very least. But certainly, I was surprised to see that that Galatasaray kind of found some form and was able to convert. As long as Drogba can kind of connect with the goal, it's kind of had my eye on Burak Yılmaz lately because he's got to be that guy who can convert, and he's just not converting them with any real consistency. Of course, who was it on Beşiktaş? I think it was Manuel Fernandez who missed like a one-on-one situation. And these kinds of things are kind of, I'm sort of sad to see it even when it's the opposing team, even when it's Beşiktaş, because you just want to see quality football at the end of the day. And I think this game would have been a lot more exciting if strikers were able to convert a little bit more consistently. But for me, that was sort of the difference in this one in terms of the score, was Drogba was able to, line the ball up with the net, and these other opportunities like this, for Fernandez's opportunity in the first half, just that could have changed the whole game.
Right. So basically what was happening in the stands, I think I did see a couple of fights in the stands before the Felipe Melo red card. He got a direct card in the second minute of stoppage time out of four for his tackle on Ramon Mata. And then there was a scuffle between Beşiktaş and Galatasaray players, and then fans started invading the pitch. Melo got escorted to the tunnel, and he took off his Galatasaray jersey and was holding it up. And I'm thinking to myself, are you a troll? And I think I mentioned that on Twitter, that, he must be the Turkish League's biggest troll, because, that's just not a good thing to do. That's just not the right thing to do in that situation. But, you know, the tackle there, I mean, I don't think anybody is questioning whether it was a direct red or not. I think more people are probably talking about the suspension he would later get, and we'll get to all that later on. But from your perspective, I mean, that tackle certainly did deserve a red card because, you know, it could have been way worse than what it was. I mean, if you saw the replay, I mean, yeah, it almost looks like he might be going for the ball, but it looks like he's going for the leg, and it could have been way worse. The result could have been way worse.
Yeah, no, it wasn't murder. Yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't murder, but it was attempted murder. I mean, like, he kind of came in super dangerously. It was just luck that he didn't really connect, and nobody was hurt, but it was a crazy tackle, and the referee didn't take very much time to show him the red card. You know, matter of fact, it was more or less instant. And people talk about this play because, of course, it was ended up being the last play of the game. And, you know, as though it was some huge controversial thing. Yes, I agree that the guy's a jerk and his sportsmanship is very low class. And, you know, I don't think anybody argues that that Felipe Melo's personality is, you know, is not conducive to friendly interaction, to put it as mildly as a person possibly can. But he did a dangerous tackle and he got a red card and he was sent off. I mean, that's what happens to people. You know what I mean? It's not like he got away with it. It's not like he dove in the penalty box or something and then there was a penalty call, you know, for Galatasaray or something like that. I mean, he was a jerk and he was duly punished for it. I don't like the fact that he's kind of a jerk, and I'm sure Beşiktaş fans don't like that even more. But I mean, there's a way to deal with these people and the things they do, and that's how it was dealt with. So I mean, yeah, for me, it's been kind of confusing, like how much people have been talking about this play, and I realized like the Beşiktaş fans' blood was sort of already pretty hot at that point. So, you know, maybe this was just, you know, kind of pushed them over the edge. But like for me, it was, you know, the situation was dealt with as it should have been.
Right, so fans started invading the pitch. Beşiktaş manager Slaven Bilic was ejected sometime like during when the pitch invasion was beginning. I'm not sure exactly what time period he got ejected from, but he did get ejected after the game. And then, you know, I just want to say something. Who the heck brings plastic chairs, plastic patio chairs for security? I mean, couldn't you make those security guys stand? That was just really ridiculous. I mean, people were running out onto the field, throwing those plastic chairs. You know, then the police obviously had to get involved. There were reports of whether there was tear gas being fired or wasn't fired or things like that. And, good. I mean, it's just like, it doesn't make Turkish football look good. But in the end of the day, it's kind of like, it's Turkey, don't ask. I mean, but we all know that they're pretty ballistic. But I got to tell you something. It didn't make, you know, the league look any good, even though we've seen these sort of things before.
It was sort of a weak-looking pitch invasion, you know, to me as well. Like, you know, some fans kind of dribbled out there a little bit, and then everyone else kind of ran out there. But it was sort of, it looked kind of awkward. And, you know, there were reports on Twitter that, you know, I guess Çarşı claimed that none of their guys ran out to the pitch and that they were trying to convince everyone else not to. It seemed like, and you really kind of got that impression from seeing it. It's like, you know, half the fans were kind of into it, most of them sort of weren't, and it just, as far as pitch invasions go, if I may critique the
right
pitch invasion,
I think it was
awkward.
you have your own pitch invasion story. Might as well say that.
Well, I mean, the last time I was in Turkey for a football match, it was when Ankara Gücü invaded Ondokuz Maya Stadium pitch after us going down 3-0 in the first half to Turku Konyaspor, whom we see now in the Super League. But the fans there started just tearing up the seats and invaded the pitch, and that was a real pitch invasion, okay? Because like the cops were trying to hold the fences together to stop the fans from getting over them, and eventually there were just too many pressure points, I guess, on the wall, because the fans on all sides of the stadium were trying to bust through, and eventually they did. Over in the Gecekondu area, where the sort of the craziest and most passionate fans tend to hang out, and And so they kind of burst through, and that was a real pitch invasion. Like, you know, because there were away fans there that they wanted to kill. But this was just everyone there was a Beşiktaş fan. So, and this, okay, you know, maybe they had a problem with the referee, but I mean, look at the highlights. The ref pretty much got the calls correct. I mean, you know, and in fact, Galatasaray may have even deserved like a penalty kick at some point that they didn't get. It was just, you know, I felt like the ref, you know, didn't do a particularly heinous job. It's so when you're invading the pitch, who are you going after, right? I mean, like, who's right. the enemy?
Right.
And there wasn't really one except for Felipe Melo, but, you know, nobody likes him, so.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the subject of the referee, because the referee for this match was Fırat Aydınus. Now, if you remember last week, I had mentioned that, you know, Gaziantepspor coach Bülent Uygun said, I don't want him refereeing any matches I coach in. And to me, it just seemed as though that, you know, he didn't do that good of a job refereeing this match to begin with. You know, and apparently I've heard, like, he may have failed his UEFA physical test, you know, for referees. I think Cüneyt Çakır passed that. You know, there was some report out there, you know, with the whole Turkish reports. But Manuel Fernandez tweeted about the game, and he later deleted them. But he had this to say, saying, quote, Fırat Aydınus, the real protagonist of this game. You should be ashamed of being so bad. And his next tweet was, and of course, I couldn't forget Melo. Has no respect for no one and should be banned for a long time. And he wrote, ban, B-A-N instead of banned, but, you know, and that reminded me of Bülent Uygun's tirade against Fırat Aydınus, who just happened to referee this game. Now, Deputy Prime Minister Bülent Arınç has slammed these incidents, saying, quote, those incidents were extremely upsetting and ugly. Radical measures should be taken to prevent such an incident happening again. It seems that 3,000 to 5,000 people had been prepared to stage such a provocative action and infiltrated inside the stadium, or they were allowed to enter the stadium unchallenged, close quote. Now, 68 people, including 12 children, were detained after the derby, but they were released after giving testimonies to the police. So, I guess maybe we can clump the referee thing. I mean, you talked about how the refereeing wasn't too bad. I probably have a much different opinion on that.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was particularly heinous. It was just, you know, yeah, the refereeing in Turkey tends to be, you know, pretty bad. But I don't think you could just blame the whole game on it in this case.
Right.
But people will disagree with that. And, yeah, more power to them, I say.
Okay, then. So the fans rush the field now. I got sent a picture over my Twitter, and in case you want to follow us over Twitter, Jeremy is at AsimBey, AsimBey, or for me, it's my name, @_Dizdar. So the fans that I got sent a picture over my Twitter, and it showed the Çarşı fans being on the upper deck of the stadium and the recently formed 1453 Kartal supporters group on the field. And a lot of people have been accusing them for really causing the pitch invasion. And, you know, they're also been suspected of being an AKP-sponsored group, you know, the AK party, you know, the ruling government. So now we got to think about the political climate. You know, League TV, you know, censored the toxin resistance chants, and, you know, people are accusing that the 1453 Kartal group of staging the pitch invasion just to screw with Beşiktaş. So this is looking like, you know, there's always going to be politics involved, like we predicted before even the season started, considering the protests in late May, early June, the Gezi Park protests, and, you know, now we got this. So there's obviously going to be a lot more politically charged fans these days because of those protests, and, you know, we're seeing it here. Maybe this 1453 Kartal group, which is very much under suspicion to begin with because they were only formed, I believe it was last month or only a few weeks ago. So with these guys, you know, they're being accused of, you know, of provocation, just getting into onto the pitch, really to ruin it for Beşiktaş, because Çarşı came out with a statement saying, we had nothing to do with this. You know, this was not our guys. You know, we wouldn't do anything to harm Beşiktaş. So looking at this, I mean, obviously there's some political tinge to this pitch invasion. At least there's a possibility of a political tinge to this pitch invasion.
Right, and the conspiracy theories that come along with it, and you know, there might even be some truth to them, because, you know, like I said, the pitch invasion, just the whole thing was sort of awkward and so needless. I mean, you're a minute and a half or 2 minutes of stoppage time left, and it's just over, and you know what, it's
let me just interrupt you there. I mean, they could have had a free kick. I mean, Manuel Fernandez could have scored off a direct free kick. So, I mean, it's like, well, they would have had a chance, at least on the free kick. Instead, you know, they have to go out and do this pitch invasion. But I honestly think that this 1453 cartel group is really more of a front for the AKP. I mean, that may sound like a conspiracy theory, but to me, when you look at Beşiktaş isn't really known for being a very pro-government club, especially with Çarşı. They're pretty much an anarchist group. You know, they have the anarchy A in their logo. And, you know, Beşiktaş is really more of, you know, maybe the club of maybe the lower middle class, you know, if we want to use stereotypes. But, you know, obviously, you know, with Turkey these days, you know, there's always a variety of people rooting for Beşiktaş. I actually know that the president of Turkey, Abdullah Gül, is a Beşiktaş fan. So you have basically a variety of fans. But, you know, looking at this 1453 cartel group, I mean, I just look at them with a lot of suspicion. I mean, they were only formed only a few weeks ago. So maybe it might sound like a conspiracy theory, but, you know, I'm still looking at them with suspicion, because compared with Çarşı, they don't seem to be really much for, you know, maybe Beşiktaş values in a sense.
Yeah, but I mean, it just seems more easily explained by just, you know, rash sort of stupidity than a conspiracy. But whatever the case, it does seem rather unusual. And my point is that we're not even 15% of the way through the season. It's not really the time to start getting super bent out of shape about, you know, a disappointing home loss. I mean, Beşiktaş has been doing fine. They can take a loss. You know, it's not the championship game. It's not the end of the season. The whole season wasn't thrown on this game. Everything's still fine in their camp. No need for these kinds of theatrics. And, of course, it seems like they've got a lot of stuff to sort out among their own fans.
Interesting point. Now, here's another thing from the Turkish Sports and Youth Ministry. Now, they are going to ask the Football Federation, the Turkish Football Federation, to go negotiate with UEFA. And UEFA has barred any police forces in the stadiums since 2004. You know, in 2004, UEFA barred the presence of, you know, police being security. But I'm going to read off the Syria Daily News article. Youth and Sports Minister Suat Kilic has announced the roadmap to be followed to tackle hooliganism on September 24th. And the Football Federation will ask UEFA for an exceptional solution formula, arguing safety of life is at risk during the games. Now, UEFA is mainly opposed to the presence of armed and uniformed police working inside the stadiums, but the authorities are considering the option of authorizing civilian-dressed police. So that's just ridiculously stupid. It's like, already Beşiktaş fans do not like the police anyway. So, I mean, it just seems as though that this is not really going to solve anything. I mean, I think we spoke about this last night over the phone. It seems as though that this is more of a short-sighted solution to really a much bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the political news of the last 6 months or 4 months has shown us anything, it's that the police don't really have a grip on the situation, or that they don't really pose a – they don't stand to deter large, angry crowds of people. When you have police, then do you also therefore have rubber bullets? Are they going to let the Tomas into the stadium? Right? Are they going to be water cannoning people? It's like, once you let the police in, then they have the legal authority to do whatever they feel like. You know, the way things go in Turkey these days, anyway. And I think that's what UEFA is sort of trying to avoid. You know, a situation where, what you almost got to protect the fans and the players from the police in some cases. So this is like the big thing they're pushing for, is being able to just fill the stadium with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of you know, riot police. But has that really ever stopped anyone? And in this case, it was a record crowd, right? I mean, right. It's harder for the police to control a crowd like that, and it's harder for the crowd themselves to control themselves And I think maybe that was where sort of that lack of cooperation or solidarity on the part of the Beşiktaş fans was. You know, when 30,000 of them show up at Önünü in a typical season, I think more of them are on the same page as far as, you know, what irresponsible things they're prepared to do. But it was just a bad situation, and seemed to get worse. And I don't think that would be helped by having scores of police. It's just,
yeah, I don't think scores of police is not going to help. I mean, I know stories in South America where they have the riot police at certain games there, but, you know, with the riot police there, it almost seems as though that the opposite effect will occur. It'll actually encourage the fans to maybe throw things onto the field, and I've seen this in some South American games, you know. And, you know, I've even heard it on the Five Live World Football Phone. You know, Tim Vickery always talks about, you know, with the riot police there, you know, holding up those shields, it actually kind of encourages the fans to be a little more bold and, you know, throwing things out onto the field. You know, they throw bags of urine. Or is that more I think that's more Central America more than anything. But still, I mean, my point being is, with the police there, it's probably going to have more of an opposite effect on fans. Instead of the fans, like, backing off, it probably will encourage them to, like, get in their faces and throw stuff onto the field. So I don't think police security in stadium, having the police there, and like you said, you know, having those water cannons and having tear gas, like, you know, those tear gas canisters being fired and all that, that's not going to help at all. To me.
Well, here's the thing. You know, hooliganism is a well-understood phenomenon at this point, and there are known ways of dealing with it, right? And those known ways are known by, for example, the English, right? Just go ask them how they dealt with their situation. And there are, you know, a small handful of strong measures they took, which totally changed, you know, the scene inside the stands, you know, raising ticket prices and putting in surveillance cameras and, you know, to bring hold people accountable for violence and things like that, you know, transformed the scene, you know, in English football. So, you know, it's not a big secret how to deal with this. And I've just never heard of a situation where a country led in their own police force with more weapons and more manpower, and that just solved everything. I just don't see it.
All right, then. I guess we'll have to try and wrap this segment up, but at least we should spend some time on the sanctions that have been handed out since then. Now, as of the recording of this podcast, we do not know the results of the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby. I'm going to assume that Galatasaray is probably going to be handed a 3-0 forfeit victory, even though they were winning the match 2-1 at the time of the match getting abandoned. But the sanctions actually came out maybe a couple of hours before we started recording this. So we'll start off with Galatasaray first. Felipe Melo gets the 2-match ban for that tackle on Ramon Mata, but Beşiktaş really got hammered by the PFDK. They will have to play the next 4 matches behind closed doors. They get a 40,000 Turkish lira fine for, I'm just going to generalize it, fan misbehavior. 10,000 Turkish lira fine for failure to provide adequate security. And a 20,000 Turkish lira fine for going beyond the capacity of the stadium and having fans block stairways. Now, we had mentioned earlier that Slaven Bilic did get ejected by referee Ferhat Aydınus during the pitch invasion. And he gets a 3-match touchline ban and a 13,000 Turkish lira fine. So I guess we could start off with Felipe Melo first. I mean, considering his reputation for being, well, for lack of a better term, a douchebag, and I think I called him a troll on Twitter, the biggest troll in the Turkish league right now. I mean, 2 matches, yeah, that's the standard for a direct red card, but I would have thought, like, maybe because he has a reputation for being a problem child or being some sort of a powder keg, he may have earned maybe, like, 3 or 4 matches, but 2 matches, I think you were giving me the counter-argument that Galatasaray fans could say, well, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it could have been way worse than it was and things like that. And, okay, well, that was dangerous. However, a 2-match ban, a lot of people are going to have a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the punishment is inappropriate one way or the other. It's it could have been more matches, but at the same time, I mean, you know, he got the ball and he barely touched the guy. You know, and I think it should have still been a red card. But, you know, if somebody got injured in the process, right, or if you know, there was some pushing and shoving after the fact. But there was none of that. It was just he did this horrible tackle, and nothing really bad came of it, except it was a super bad idea. And two-match ban, you know, you would not hear me complaining if it was three or four matches, but I don't really see that it's a real controversial thing. Like I say, I've always been confused about the controversy around Filippo Melo red card incident. It just, the guy's a jerk, and now he's banned a couple of matches. I think it's adequate, but, you know, if you want to argue that it's 2 weeks sauce, then okay, I'll take it. And I would say look forward to him probably getting banned again, because he just seems like a sort of like a problem waiting to happen. But hopefully he finds a way to keep his cool.
Yeah, but let's talk about the Beşiktaş sanctions. Four matches behind closed doors. Then they get all these fines for, you know, adequate security, fan cursing or fan misbehavior, going beyond capacity. And then Slava Bilic gets a 3-match touchline ban. I would have thought like maybe he would have gotten like 2 maybe, but Bilic is going to appeal that. You know,
yeah, that seems strange, because like he didn't really seem to have a big role. I mean, you know, after the pitch invasion starts, maybe he yells a few things or something, and then he gets ejected. But it's not like he was a real problem, or he was like he shoved the fourth official or something. You know what I mean? It just seems like he just happened to be coaching the wrong team that day.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that's going to get appealed, and that's probably going to get reduced on appeal. But Beşiktaş, with their next four matches, they'll have to play behind closed doors. I mean, is this too little, too harsh? I mean, it's people were talking about in Turkey that Beşiktaş would at least get a 5-match ban. But, you know, four matches, well, I think it's really too early to tell. I think maybe it's a little bit on the lenient side. Maybe you could argue it's a bit on the harsh side, but, you know, with people talking about Beşiktaş maybe getting 5 matches at the very least, considering, you know, the pitch invasion and all that, 4 matches, maybe that might not be so bad, but still, I mean, people are going to argue this either way, that, you know, 4 matches is too much, 4 matches is too little, and things like that. But, you know, 4 matches behind closed doors, that's going to be a pretty tough task to handle.
Yeah, I was just sort of looking at their schedule coming up and trying to see what are these matches. And 3 matches that it looks like Slaven Bilic could miss, unless, like you predict, his sentence, so to speak, is reduced. I mean, they've got 2 road games coming up, Beşiktaş do, with Antalyaspor and then with Eskişehirspor a couple of weeks after that. And then they host Çaykur and then away to Akhisar Belediye, and then a home game with Karabükspor. So at least they don't seem to have any, you know, big derbies, any more big derbies coming up. I don't see Fenerbahce on the list. I don't see like a Bursaspor or something like that.
Well, they've already played Bursaspor.
That's true. You know, but certainly any of these games you don't want to be without your coach or without your fans or both. But, you know, interpret it how you will, I guess. But I think, for example, if Çaykur Rizespor, you know, is able to hold their own these next couple of weeks, then maybe Beşiktaş will really be missing their coach and their fans for that home game, 3 matches from now against Rize.
Right. So obviously we know Beşiktaş is going to appeal this sanction, but I did look something up on my Twitter account that their next 4 home matches are against Rizespor, Konyaspor, Karabükspor, and Sivasspor. You know, I think other than Rizespor, you know, it might not be so bad for them, but, you know, without the fans behind them, you know, it's going to be a pretty tough task. You know, Karabükspor doesn't look too bad. Sivasspor, you know, they're pretty mediocre at this point. Konyaspor, you know, they only got like 2 wins on the season so far. I think the real important match that they should be looking forward to is really the Rizespor match, in terms of those 4 match behind closed doors ban that they got. And I'm still wondering, are they still doing that women and children only thing? Remember that? I mean, are they still doing that? I mean, it would be interesting to see that, but I don't think, even with like the women and children only get in for free, maybe that might actually help, because, you know, it'll be a much different atmosphere, and maybe the players might get annoyed by it. But I'm still wondering, are they still doing that? I don't think they're still doing that, although that would be interesting to see if they still do that. However, you know, Rizespor, Konyaspor, Kırıkkale, and Sivasspor will be the next four home matches that Beşiktaş will have to serve out, obviously pending the inevitable appeal.
Yeah, I don't know if the women and children thing still stands, but in any case, I'm a little concerned if they're handing out, you know, fines for things like misbehavior and swearing, right? Because from what we've seen, when the women and children come, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a children friendly sort of scene in terms of what's yelled and so forth.
Alrighty then. I think we've taken more than enough time to talk about the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby and all the aftermath and all that. Any sort of final thoughts from you about this whole thing? I mean, for me, it's one of those things that doesn't make Turkish football look good and puts them in the headlines for the wrong reasons, but I guess this is the sort of thing that's like kind of a feature of Turkey, you know, with the crazy fans and all that. But I think really there is a sporting aspect to it, but I think we do have to consider there might be a political aspect behind it as well.
Yeah, and, you know, the biggest problems in Turkey in terms of politics is, you know, it's all a bit unstable right now, and people are very upset. And the biggest problem in football is, it seems to be, crowd control in a lot of situations. And so you've just got a nation of people who are, you know, discontent in large numbers, I guess you could say, and it's kind of blurring those lines between football and politics, and sort of maybe even redefining what is sort of the expected behavior at some of these football matches, not just in terms of pitch invasions, but also, you know, what's being chanted and things like opposing team fan interactions and things like that. But you know, yeah, my final thoughts about it are, it's just silly and unnecessary, although I'm always up for a good pitch invasion every now and again. It's just, this one wasn't really one of the best ones, and I'm frankly disappointed. But it's still early in the season. We've only seen 45 matches played, and we've still got plenty to go and plenty of time to turn things around for Beşiktaş and for the whole kind of tone of football this season so far.
Alrighty then, so that will end this segment of Turkish Football Weekly. Coming up, we've got a coaching change to talk about, and it probably is a coaching change you all probably never would have expected. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. We have a coaching change that we're going to have to talk about, and it actually shocked a lot of people. In fact, Twitter in Turkey seemed to be broken down afterwards. It just broke Twitter. It's really more of a sacking more than anything, because Galatasaray's managerial position is now vacant because Fatih Terim was sacked from the managerial job. Now, the board of directors have stated that they sacked him via majority vote in a two-hour meeting this past Tuesday. Now, here's a statement from the club saying, quote, "In spite of the decision of the Galatasaray Sports Club and the board of directors to extend the term of the contract with Fatih Terim for two more years as of May 2014, when Mr. Terim has rejected the offer, the board has instead decided to terminate the contract between him and the club. We would like to thank Mr. Terim for all his services and wish him all the best in his future career." Close quote. Now, Terim reportedly learned of his sacking via television while conducting a training session with his players in preparation for their league game against Çaykur Rizespor this weekend. Now, after the news got out, like I said, Twitter basically broke in Turkey. Fans had gathered at the club's training facilities at the Florya district of Istanbul to protest, chanting for the board to resign. There were about 30 fans or so right after the announcement was made. That was the protest there. Now, it was originally reported that Galatasaray assistant coaches Hasan Şaş, Ümit Davala, and goalkeeper coach Claudio Taffarel had resigned from their positions as well, but League TV has now reported that Davala and Şaş would stay on, and Taffarel has also stayed on. There are articles out there saying that those three, they are training the team, but there is a vacant position in terms of the top guy. Now, earlier this month, Galatasaray had put a statement up on their website saying that Terim had received a 2-year extension of his contract, and we even reported that on this podcast. So, really, I mean, looking at this, like, this had to be the most unexpected news of the week. You know, we were anticipating what was going to be happening with the aftermath of the Beşiktaş Galatasaray derby, but I don't think anybody saw this coming. But maybe looking back on it on hindsight, maybe we should have seen it coming, but I just want to get your first reactions to when you heard the news of Fatih Terim getting sacked.
Yeah, I mean, I think my reaction was very similar to most everyone else. I was like, what? Like, I was wondering if anything real sort of specific had happened that I hadn't heard about, because it seems like, okay, Galatasaray's off to a bit of a rough start, but it could be a lot worse. And after especially coming off essentially a derby victory, it was definitely a shock. At the same time, I mean, sort of since reading up about it and hearing a lot of the reasons that were given, it sort of started, like you said, to seem a little bit more obvious. Like, yeah, you could almost kind of see it. And especially there were some reasons which weren't given, such as the fact that, you know, now he's also coaching the national team. That's not really in Galatasaray's interest. So the guy's got other things to do. He does have employment still, even though it's not with Galatasaray. But for me, it's kind of the big question is, well, who are you going to replace him with? You've got a Champions League match this coming Wednesday, a really important Champions League match, by the way, away to Juventus. And it's certainly not convenient, to put it that way. I'm just, like everyone else at this point, is real curious to see who they're going to announce as being his replacement.
Yeah. You know, even the BBC reported that the reason for Terim's sacking was that he would not accept a 2-year contract extension. But, you know, the club had announced that he did. I mean, even we reported that he did. So it's just kind of interesting as though, like, what happened in those few weeks that led Terim to his sacking. Now, I've said previously that maybe we should have seen this coming. But Fanatique had a really good article pretty much explaining the whole situation. You know, a lot of speculation. I think I said this last week really in passing, but I really didn't go into it because I thought, you know, this is just one of those Turkish media rumors that over the last few weeks or so, you know, Terim and Aysal weren't on the best of terms. So Fanatique had this article kind of explaining, you know, kind of like the timeline in terms of, you know, everything leading up to Terim's sacking. So first, they were at odds, you know, when Aysal was in Italy chasing Wesley Sneijder back in January. But you know, Terim said he was not happy with the potential of having him signed. You know, it might mess up team chemistry. But Aysal reportedly told him that he would, quote, buy Sneijder and even a coach that would play him, close quote. And if you remember, I think back even in January when we were covering this, when we first debuted on World Football Daily, that Aysal referred to Terim as an employee of the club, or in the Turkish word, it's eleman. I think it directly translates to staff member, but I think in this case, it's an employee. So on April 6th, after that match against Mersin İdmanyurdu, Terim gets ejected. He got that 9-match touchline ban, and possibly that was raising even more questions about Terim in Aysal's head. And then they were at odds over the summer in regarding signing Felipe Melo to a permanent deal. So Terim wanted to sign Melo, but Aysal thought that Melo was unreliable, and you know, maybe after the derby, maybe Aysal knew something that Terim didn't on that one. But then they came to a head in late August. You know, the Turkish Football Federation approached Terim to take the Turkish national team job. Galatasaray gave permission for Terim to work both jobs until May. Now, Terim's contract was supposed to expire in May anyway, and then they would come to a decision as to whether Terim would sign an extension or not. I mean, they did happen to announce that he had signed an extension, but now we're finding out that he didn't. Now, Galatasaray board member Şükrü Ergün claimed that Terim had signed a 4-year deal with the TFF in secret. But on September 25th, the TFF boss, Yıldırım Demirören, he held a press conference. He denied that he had signed a long-term deal with Terim. But he added that Aysal had told him that they could sign a permanent deal with the coach in January. ISIL then refuted Demirören's statement on the club's website immediately after Demirören said that. Demirören confirmed they were close to signing a deal with Tarim and said he wanted the issue to be resolved soon. So it's really more of a mess right now. Maybe we really should have seen this coming. I mean, I mentioned it in passing last week, but maybe those rumors kind of turned out to be sort of factual, because I think I remember saying back when Wesley Sneijder was signed that, is this really a guy that Tarim really wanted? And, you know, it's been a really mixed results for Sneijder ever since he signed. In fact, I seem to believe that the only person who really benefited out of Sneijder signing for Galatasaray was his wife. But that was more of a joke, but it just seems as though that it might be a little bit factual. But, you know, signing Sneijder, it kind of messed up his team chemistry. Now, signing Didier Drogba, well, that might have been a guy Tarim wanted, but it just seems as though from that point forward, obviously you have the statement where ISIL referred to Tarim as an employee. Then you had the Mersin İdman Yurdu thing where Tarim blows a gasket after receiving a 3-match ban previously. You know, everybody was talking about, well, where was that provisional suspension that got put on probation or whatever? Then he gets a 9-match touchline ban. And then the whole Felipe Melo signing that really dragged throughout the summer. You know, Tarim wanted him on a permanent deal. ISIL really didn't think he was all that reliable. And then you have, you know, the Turkish Football Federation coming in saying, hey, look, we want you to coach the national team. And I think we pretty much agreed that he was the best choice out there. And now you look at this and... Now, with him fired, I mean, should we really have seen this coming? I mean, with me reading this, I'm thinking maybe we should have seen that they were going to clash. ISIL, the chairman, and Tarim, the coach, were going to clash, and it just seemed as though the chemistry between them really wasn't there. And you would never have, envisioned that at the end of the 2011-2012 season, because everything was going along smoothly for Galatasaray winning the championship. And yeah, winning last season's championship, you know, winning cures everything and all that. However, it just seemed as though that there were some rumblings under the surface that really wasn't obvious to us back then. But now, hindsight being 2020, maybe we should have seen this coming. It's just, I didn't think it would be this soon. I think this might have been planned, but I think, you know, the announcement coming out of nowhere was really more of a surprise to me.
Yeah, I don't know much about Ünal Aysal. I mean, you point out, you quote him as kind of putting Fatih Terim in his place by reminding him that he's an employee of the club. You know, but Fatih Terim, I mean, at the very least, is kind of he's not exactly known for being a, you know, like a super compromising guy. You know, he sort of likes to do things his own way. He likes to be in charge. It seems like Ünal Aysal feels sort of similarly. And both these guys, I don't know, they seem to kind of want to run the show. And then you've got Fatih Terim, you know, not really agreeing to, what was it, like a 2-year contract. Sounds like it was sort of his way or nothing. And not just on Fatih Terim's side, but perhaps with Aysal as well. I think he said it like, if we really kind of dug into this, we might have been able to call it earlier, but it's a shock. But right, as we kind of like read into it more, you can kind of see how it all happened. So I think at this point, the question is, well, yeah, obviously who's going to replace him? But, you know, this might be a good thing, not just for the Turkish national team, right? It could end up being a good thing for Galatasaray as well, because you got to have cooperation between your chairman and your manager. It's just, that's sort of a fact. You know, I think this might be a situation where things get a little worse in the Galatasaray camp for a while before they get better. But, you know, considering how many matches he was banned from, I guess they've seen some club operation in Fatih Terim's absence enough as is, right? It's not too hard to imagine him not being there, you know, during those handful of matches where he wasn't there.
I just seem to think like maybe I think you said this when we were talking over the break. Aysal has to be seen as the boss. You know, he seems as though he's saying, I am the boss. You know, I'm your boss. I'm the one who hired you, so you have to do what I say. But, you know, running a football club is particularly different than running a business. I know Aysal is a businessman, but one of the things that a lot of people complain about when sport teams seem to do bad is that there's too much front office interference in a coach's work. you know, maybe in this case there was a lot of front office interference in Fatih Terim's work. Now, Terim, as you know, is an egotistical, well, I would say things, but I've already said hell on this. He's got an ego.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had to paint his house blue, remember? In Bodrum. Like, the guy likes to do things his way, and he's very happy to do it that way. Just not an easy guy to work with, I think. I guess that's sort of where you're going with this, right?
Right. He's not the easiest guy in the world to work with. I mean, I believe he got fired from Fiorentina because, you know, he ran into problems with the Fiorentina chairman way back in 2001, I think. If I have the timeline wrong, forgive me, but I do remember him, you know, getting the sack because, you know, he couldn't get along with the Fiorentina chairman at the time. So, yeah, Terim is a handful to work with. But once you look at it from the other side, I mean, I saw saying, okay, I'm the boss, but when you're running a sports club, you kind of have to do what the coach is saying, or at least take the coach's suggestion to heart, because the coach is the one running the team. All he's basically doing is he's just making sure to provide the money so that the club still runs at an even keel, you know. And I saw, obviously, he wanted to have, you know, the big signings, you know, the big splash and all that. And, yeah, I can understand where he's coming from saying, like, you know, I'm your boss, you work for me. But when it comes to running a football team or a sports club in general, when the front office interferes with on-field matters, you know, like with player signings and, you know, coaches and all that, once they interfere with that, that shows me that the team is not being run very well, because usually winning teams usually have, you have an owner, you have like a chairman or whatever, they become the chairman of the club, but usually they're just out of the way so that the coach does his work without any interference. Here you see that, you know, maybe Isov wanted to maybe stick his nose in the business, but with Terim, he's really an egotistical guy, but he knew what he was doing. I mean, you win the last two championships, go to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, so obviously he knew what he was doing. But it seems to me as if they were clashing in terms of styles. You know, Isol said, I'm the boss, well, and Terim is like, well, I'm the coach of the team, I know what I'm doing. So it's almost like, well, somebody's got to call someone's bluff, like you said.
Right. It's worth remembering that, or worth noting, I should say, that, you know, Galatasaray has only won one match this season. I mean, they, you know, they've gotten off to one of the worst starts, you know, in recent history. And so despite Fatih Terim's other successes in the past couple seasons, you got to kind of look at it and say, well, before the derby match, things weren't looking very good. About halftime of the derby match, things still were looking pretty dismal for Galatasaray so far this season. So perhaps Aysal felt like he had a little bit more say in the matters, you know, since Fatih Terim wasn't really proving that he could really live up to expectations this season.
Right, and that 6-1 drubbing by Real Madrid didn't even help either.
Certainly not.
Right. So I look at this and I'm thinking maybe Galatasaray, you know, everything needs to be on an even keel. And it just seems as though that maybe from the time Schneider got signed, and I really kind of doubted, well, I think at the time I said, well, could they be able to afford him was the real question. But it seems as though that once Isol started to mess with the team chemistry, it just seemed as though that Terim just tried to fight back. But the thing is, at the end of the day, if the players aren't doing well and if the team isn't doing well, then who gets the blame? The coach does. So, yeah, Galatasaray hasn't gotten off to the best of starts this season. Well, they'll probably win by forfeit in the derby against Beşiktaş, and, well, we still don't know what the exact result is. Thank you, PFDK, for not informing us of that this week. But
yeah, right? They really are so inconsiderate, the PFDK, of our podcast. I just don't...
I don't think anybody there listens to this anyway. But still, back to Terim for a second. Back to Terim. You know, from the point of when Schneider got signed, and then I saw calling him an employee of the club, to here, maybe I really believe, if I want to, you know, post some final thoughts on this whole situation, is that Terim is a handful to deal with. Yes, he's got an ego. Yes, but he wins. He wins in the Turkish league. Now, The thing is, Tarum does have a boss that he has to answer to. He also has to answer to the fans. But the fans have already given him a lot of credit. You know, they have a huge credit line between Tarum and the fans. Now, I saw, I don't know why he would try to interfere in the business. Just let Tarum go and let him do his work. You know, obviously they tried to get the status for players with EU passports to be counted as domestic players, but that wasn't going to happen. But, you know, that just as an aside, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, we have to look at it as, does Unal Aysal know what he's doing? And, you know, I think one person tweeted this, and he said, or he wrote, you know, by firing Fatih Terim, Unal Aysal's days may be numbered as Galatasaray chairman. So we'll probably look back on this and maybe say it was the right move or maybe the wrong move, but really it's too early to tell. And, you know, some of the coaching rumors that I've heard about who will replace Fatih Terim, I mean, I've heard something about Didier Drogba being a player manager. I've heard about former Manchester City coach Roberto Mancini coming in. But, you know, I think in this case, you know, Aysal wanted to be seen as the boss. But I think by firing Terim, he may have just screwed Galatasaray for this season. But then again, we might say Galatasaray weren't screwed if they win the league title, but this coaching change coming out of nowhere doesn't make it look like it's all rosy in Galatasaray.
No, I mean, I think you can safely say it isn't, and it's a bit scary, really, but this kind of thing is always a risk, and perhaps things would have only gotten worse if he had stayed, really. And I don't just mean in terms of Galatasaray's kind of lack of performance this season, but also just in terms of relationships, you know, within the Galatasaray camp.
Right. I don't know how team chemistry is there, but there's always going to be rumors that, you know, maybe there's player dissension or whatever in there. But having Terim gone, I mean, going forward, I mean, I really don't know where Galatasaray is going to go. I mean, if they could get a European spot, well, great. I mean, if they win the title, well, then Unal Aysal is going to look like a genius. But at this point, I would not have fired him this soon into the season. I think that's what I'm really trying to say.
Definitely. And it seems like there are already a few suspects for who's going to be the replacement.
Which I've already mentioned, you know.
Yeah, no, and
Fanatec has reported, or it's rumored that, you know, Mancini is close to a deal with Galatasaray or something like that. But I think when the hiring actually does happen, and that'll probably happen by the time next week's podcast is recorded, we'll talk about that more in detail. But that will do it for this edition of the podcast. We went very long on it, but obviously people are going to look at the derby and, you know, they'll read about what's been happening, you know, maybe from BBC or things like that, but we need to provide a little bit more detail, just filling in the gaps for people who really don't have a true understanding of Turkish football. And also Terim's sacking, which I'm sure everybody was shocked to learn that, but you know, I think this is a pretty good discussion. I think it's well worth the listener's time.
Definitely. And, I think Fatih Terim's legacy deserved a little extra commentary as well. So, So it's been good. It's been good.
You know, here's the funny thing about Fatih Terim. You know, back in his second term, I believe he was fired after a match against Rizespor. And ironically, or coincidentally, depending on which way you look at it, you know, the first game without Fatih Terim after his third reign is going to be against Rizespor. And I believe I read somewhere, you know, somebody asked him, are you going to come back to Galatasaray? And I think Terim responded, only if I'm the chairman.
Well, there you have it.
That would be interesting if he was chairman. But that's going to do it for Turkish Football Weekly this week. Jeremy, thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it as always.
And we thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.